From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherie Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, reviving pop music that was banned in Nazi Germany, we'll hear an in-studio performance by Hudson Shad, whose members recreate the harmonies of the German group The Comedian Harmonists. They were banned in 1935 because the Nazis considered their music degenerate, and three members of the group were Jewish. This music is the subject of a new documentary musical called Banned in Berlin. Also, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews Pearl Jam's latest, and we remember America's baby doctor, Dr. Benjamin Spock, who died yesterday at the age of 94. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. President Clinton has again denied that he inappropriately touched a former aide. Mr. Clinton says he is mystified and disappointed by what Kathleen Willey discussed last night on CBS's news magazine, 60 Minutes. Willey alleges President Clinton made a sexual advance toward her while she worked in the White House. Clinton administration spokeswoman Ann Lewis told NBC today she, too, was surprised by Willey's remarks.
What I saw last night was someone who talked about being angry, feeling that she'd been taken advantage of. And yet in 1996, when she was no longer associated with the president or with the White House, she came to see me and said, I really want to work in this campaign. I want to be part of the president's team. She told me her very sad personal story. I remember thinking it's as if that was the last time she was happy, was her memories of the White House and of working with the president. And she really wants to come back and start that again.
Lewis says she's not trying to offer a White House contradiction of Willie's account, but rather is offering a personal view. Former Sergeant Major of the Army Gene McKinney faces sentencing today on his obstruction of justice conviction. He could face 5 years in prison, a cut in rank, and a dishonorable discharge. He was cleared of sexual misconduct charges against six military women last week who had accused him of unwanted sexual advances. Women say that the Army has done nothing to protect their reputations and that the military jury sacrificed them to protect McKinney. Dr. Benjamin Spock, the pediatrician whose child care books helped guide parents for decades, has died at the age of 94, NPR's Vicky Quay reports.
Spock is best known for his common sense theories on child rearing. He often told parents things like, trust yourself, and you know more than you think. His book, Spock's Baby and Child Care, published in 1946, became the Bible of baby boom parents. In it, Spock attempted to reduce some of the rigidities of pediatric teachings, like those having to do with the feeding of infants. He advised that it was better to feed babies when they wanted to eat, rather than according to a rigid schedule. Spock's critics branded him as being too permissive. Some even blamed him for a generation of hippies. In later years, he urged parents to give children strong values and encouraged them to help others. In the 1970s, he wrote Raising Children in Difficult Times, which discussed issues such as drug use, contraception, and daycare. Spock died at home in San Diego with his family. Vicky Quay, NPR News.
The Salvation Army reports its relief supplies are nearly gone in Albany, Georgia, where a massive cleanup is underway after a week of flooding. Much of the group's food, bottled water, and cleaning supplies were used up after tornadoes struck central Florida a few weeks ago. On Wall Street, the Dow's up 57 points at 8,659. Trading is active. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, the stock market is higher with a broad base advance. Bloomberg's Doug Krisner has details from New York.
The market is being boosted by a list of mergers and acquisitions. In the wireless phone business, Altel Corporation is buying 360 Communications for about $6 billion in stock and assumed debt. And Aetna, Inc. is buying the healthcare business of New York Life for more than $1 billion. The market is also being supported by a drop in long-term interest rates, which have mirrored a decline in the price of crude oil. Crude has lost 2% and is trading at a four-year low on disappointment that OPEC has not yet acted to reduce worldwide supply. I'm Doug Krisner.
Japan's prime minister says he expects Indonesia to make decisions of courage and to keep promises to reform Indonesia's shaken economy. Japanese Prime Minister Ryotaro Hashimoto met with Indonesian President Suharto over the weekend and told reporters he's convinced Suharto will try to restore international confidence in the Indonesian economy. It's suffering from its worst economic crisis in 30 years. The movie Titanic is now the best-selling picture of all time, the movie industry reports. Titanic has surpassed Star Wars as the biggest domestic moneymaker of all time. The leader of one of the country's largest black church groups has pleaded not guilty to charges of racketeering and grand theft. Reverend Henry Lyons entered his plea today in Tampa, Florida. Lyons presides over the National Baptist Convention USA. He's accused of taking money from corporations that had set up marketing arrangements with the convention. Again on Wall Street, the Dow's up 57 points. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music, putting a world of knowledge within your reach with over 200 locations across America. 800-644-7733.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A new musical is recreating pop music banned in Germany under Hitler. The musical, Banned in Berlin, is reviving the music of the Comedian Harmonists, a German group which formed in 1927 and featured five singers and a pianist performing pop and jazz tunes sung in close harmony. Many of their songs were novelty tunes, and like the Mills Brothers, they often vocally imitated instruments. Here's what they sounded like in 1933. In 1935, after becoming international stars, the Comedian Harmonists were forced to split up because three of the members were Jewish, and the music itself was categorized by the Nazis as degenerate. The group recreating their sound is called Hudson Shad. Their new documentary musical, Banned in Berlin, is being presented this week by the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. My guests are singers Wilbur Pauley, Mark Bleek, Timothy Lee Evans, Hugo Munday, Peter Becker, and pianist Robert Walensky. We invited them to talk with us and sing a few songs. You'll recognize this one.
Ohne dich ist die ganze Welt für mich ohne Sonne. Du bist nur allein meine Wonne. Wolltest es ewig sein? Nur du wolltest nur Sonne in the sky, stormy weather. Since my girl and I together keeps raining all the time, keeps boring, keeps raining all the time. When she went away, the blues walked in and met me. If she stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me home in the sun once more. Ohne dich ist die ganze Welt für mich ohne Freude. Frag dein eigenes Herz, was ich leide. I'm so weary with all the stormy weather. Just can't seem to get myself together. Can't go on. Everything I had is gone. Stormy weather. Since my girl and I are together, keeps raining all the time. Life is bad. Just can't get my poor self together. I am weary all the time. So weary. So weary all the time.
she went away, the blues walked in and met me.
If she stays away, a rocking chair will get me.
All I do is pray the Lord above let me walk in the sun once more. Oh, and at least the concert will be on a Friday. Frag dein eigenes Herz, was ich leide, und kehr zu mir zurück, und kehr zu mir zurück, zurück.
Very nice. That's the Hudson Shad performing music as originally harmonized by the comedian harmonist. And I want to get to a little bit later how you learned to do the instrumental parts vocally. But first I want to talk a little bit about the story of the comedian harmonists. And they were really popular in Germany, in Europe, in, I guess, the 20s and 30s.
Yes.
Well, give us a sense of how popular they were.
They sold out every hall they played. They were as popular as Marlene Dietrich and what's the other group?
Hans Albers
and... They had the number one record in France in 1930. They sold out Radio City Music Hall when they came here for, they were as popular in Europe as the Mills Brothers were popular in the United States.
Three of the six members of the Comedian Harmonists were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And after Hitler came to power, they got a letter from the music authority.
Yes.
Saying what?
Saying that the Aryan members could not continue performing anymore with the non-Aryan members, in other words, the Jews. They could keep the name, everything was fine, as long as they hired three new guys to come in and take their place. And that was the gist of the letter.
So the band split up?
The band, yes, they split up. They bifurcated into the six original members started, they became two groups, really.
And did the Jews leave the country, the Jewish members of the group?
Yeah, they went to Austria, and they picked up a group. They picked up three new guys there, and they started touring around the world. And, in fact, were in Austria at the Australia at the outbreak of, at the official outbreak of World War II in 1939 of the invasion of Poland.
The non-Jewish members who stayed in Germany and continued to sing as the Comedian Harmonists, they found that their repertoire was going to be limited. What kind of music was banned under the Third Reich?
Anything non-German.
Even innocuous German songs that didn't fit the fighting spirit of the Aryan nation were banned. It wasn't just foreign songs. It was even German songs that...
virility.
Yeah, that didn't have virility.
Right.
It was a pretty wide-ranging ban on just about...
And they did have to change their name to...
The Meister Sextet. It couldn't be the Comedian Harmonists anymore. They had to be the Meister Sextet. That was the German group that stayed. And finally, they were just asked not to sing anymore anyhow because the music that they sang, that they specialized in, was not suited to the German fighting spirit. Songs like, I Wish I Was a Chicken, you know. You couldn't go off to war singing, I Wish I Was a Chicken.
Well, I'd love for you to do another song that you're performing now in your show Band in Berlin. Do you want to do another song that you learned from listening to recordings by the Comedian Harmonists?
Definitely. Which one will that be? How about they were influenced by jazz, and one of the things they really liked was everybody was doing it. The Mills Brothers were doing it. The Revelers were doing it. Everybody was imitating instruments, and they did a great version of Duke Ellington's Creole Love Call, which we would like to do. Three, four, one, two.
Wow.
Great Creole Love Call, the Duke Ellington composition, as performed by the members of Hudson Shad, and that was modeled on a performance by the Comedian Harmonists, a group that was banned by the Nazi government in Germany in about 1935. And I'm really interested in hearing how you learned how to do vocally the sounds of instruments. I guess everybody has to learn this themselves. The Mills Brothers did it, the Comedian Harmonists did it, other groups have done it. Let me ask you, Hugo, you were doing the plunger trombone part. How did you teach yourself how to do that?
For that noise, your hands are in a sort of cartoon praying position, and you slide your nose in, and with, we all have different ways of doing it, but with placing your voice in your head differently and changing the shape and using wah-wah as you would with a trombone and a toilet plunger, you can... Particularly with a microphone, that helps a lot. You can get an approximation.
Give it a shot for us.
Okay. This is just the thing that Ari does in Veronica, which is... That kind of thing.
And Mark, you were doing the trumpet part. Tell us about how you're doing that.
Let's see. You mean the higher part? I did two kind of horn sounds. One is sort of a muted... horn, where your hands are pretty much cupped completely over your mouth and your nose, and then the embouchure of your lips can actually, since I was a brass player early on in life, your lips can actually vibrate while you hum, kind of like making farting noises. So you make a fart noise behind your cupped hands and you sort of get a horn sound. And a higher version of that could be...
My guests are the members of the vocal group Hudson Shad. They're in Philadelphia performing in the documentary musical Banned in Berlin. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are the members of the vocal group Hudson Shad. In their new documentary musical, Banned in Berlin, they're recreating the vocal harmonies of the Comedian Harmonists, a German group that was banned by the Nazis. This music obviously speaks to all of you in the group. And Peter, I'd like you to maybe talk a little bit about how this music speaks to you and how the situation that the Comedian Harmonists found themselves under Hitler speaks to you.
Well, this is the music of what might have been.
And it was just such brilliant, wonderful, unmistakably fabulous music. It's just one of those timeless treasures, one of those things that is recognizable by probably anybody, anytime. And it sure appealed to me that way. And, well, the harmonists, of course, didn't know what they were, what was going to happen. They didn't know, and they kept saying, we were so famous, we didn't think this would happen to us. We kept thinking somehow we were immune because we were superstars. And, of course, bit by bit, episode by episode, it became very apparent that their world was crumbling and they had to become two groups.
I'm interested in how the harmonies that you sing when you're doing the music of the Comedian Harmonists compares to the music that you were used to doing or the harmonies you were used to singing. I was wondering if maybe you could even like break down the harmony for us to take a piece, a familiar melody like Night and Day, one of the songs that you do in the show Band in Berlin. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could sing a couple of bars of Night and Day.
Sure.
And then each kind of like do your own part in it and break down the harmony for us.
Well, what is that harmony? It's sort of a six, is it submediant leading to the five, leading back to the tonic. And it's a jazz harmony. It's nothing very complex. It's certainly not Schoenbergian or anything like that. It's like F sharp. I'll sing the bass part. Well, I'll do mine first.
Did you want it all together?
Why don't you do it all together first and then break it down?
Okay. Two. Or just the num 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 num.
Tous les jours, toute la nuit, rien que toi, toujours, toujours, j'en suis ébloui.
And now my part is basically the fundamental. Tous les jours, chick, chick, toute la nuit, rien que toi, toujours, toujours, j'en suis ébloui. And then Peter's is.
Tous les jours, toute la nuit, rien que toi, toujours, toujours, j'en suis ébloui.
And then Hugo's is.
Tous les jours, toute la nuit, rien que toi, toujours, toujours, j'en suis ébloui.
Come on, Timmy.
Tous les jours, toute la nuit, rien que toi, toujours, toujours, j'en suis ébloui.
Maestro.
And the melody.
Tous les jours, toute la nuit, rien que toi, toujours, toujours, j'en suis ébloui.
Everybody knows that. It doesn't matter what language it's in.
Why don't you put it all together for us again and do another song that you do in Band in Berlin?
Okay. This is a song that composer Milton Auger wrote, and it became a huge hit in Germany. It's still known today as Weekends in the Sunshine and You and I in the Alone in the Woods Together. But we think you'll recognize the tune because it's a very popular American song as well.
Hit us an E-flat, will you?
Yeah.
Wochen, Sonnenschein, brauchst du mehr, um glücklich zu sein. Wochen, Sonnenschein, und dann mit dir im Wald allein. Weiter brauch ich nichts, um glücklich sein. Wochen, Sonnenschein. Sie singt genau wie wir ein Lied. Alle Vögel stimmen fröhlich ein. Wochenend und Sonnenschein. Kein Auto, keine Chaussee und niemand in unserer Nähe. Tief im Wald, nur ich und du. Dem Herrgott drückt ein Auge zu. Denn er schenkt uns ja zum Glücklichsein. Wochenend und Sonnenschein. Nur sechs Tage sind wir Arbeit. Doch am siebten Tag sollst du ruhen, sprach dir Herrgott. Doch wir haben noch am siebten Tag zu tun. Wochenend und Sonnenschein. Glücklich
sein, wagen in den Sonnenschein. Über uns die Lerche zieht, sie singen nur wie ein Lied. Alle Vögel stimmen fröhlich ein, wagen in den Sonnenschein.
Kein Auto, keine Chaussee, und niemals will uns vernehmen.
Ja, da, 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 tief im Wald, nur ich und du, der Herrgott drückt ein Auge zu, denn er schenkt uns ja zum Glücklichsein.
Wagen in den Sonnenschein.
Happy days are here again, the sky above is clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. So let's tell the world about it now. Happy days are here again.
Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on.
Happy days are here again. The sky above is clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. Dim, 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 dim.
The members of Hudson Shad will sing more for us in the second half of the show. Their documentary musical is called Band in Berlin, and it's being presented this week by the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Here's a recording from 1933 featuring the Comedian Harmonists. More harmonies, Band in Berlin, a review of Pearl Jam's latest, and we remember Dr. Spock with a 1988 interview. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with the vocal group Hudson Shad. In their new musical documentary, Band in Berlin, they're recreating the sound of the Comedian Harmonists, a vocal group that was banned by the Nazis in the mid-30s. Band in Berlin is being presented this week by the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. Your group, Hudson Shad, is going to tour Germany in May, performing the music of the Comedian Harmonists, the band whose music you perform in your show, Band in Berlin. I know you've toured Germany before, mm-hmm. performing some of these songs, and I'm wondering what kind of reaction you get as Americans in Germany doing the music of a group that was banned by Hitler. It's interesting there should be Americans reviving the music there.
I think one of the reasons that we're successful in Germany is that we're not German, and we are able to stand back away from this music and away from the time of this music and sing it as music without the baggage over our shoulders of what went on in Germany during this time. And I think that's one of the things that makes us successful. We bring it a new freshness, and we're bringing German music to the Germans with a new perspective on it.
So what baggage are you afraid you would be bringing if the group was German? You mean people would
the
be...
unhappy times of the of what was going on in the late 30s.
Many people in Germany, I think, because of a wish to get beyond the past, don't even remember that there was a group left in Germany after the group split up. They see the Comedian Harmonists music, the culture has having gone to America, and people have cited it's wonderful to have you bring it back. They even see the wonderful thing that happened for the 7 years that it did happen, as having had to flee and go abroad.
Right. In a way, we've become a symbolic, in a symbolic sense, yet another liberation, musically, for this group to breathe life back into it.
Now, I understand some of you have even met with the children of the original members of the Comedian Harmonists, so that must make you feel very connected to the music, too.
We met Marlene Dietrich's great-niece, someone like that, at the bar, and she said, it's wonderful to see something with a sense of humor. There hasn't been humor in Germany for a long time.
Wilbur actually met Sikorsky.
Yeah, I made a pilgrimage. I was in L.A. on a job, and I said, well, I don't know when I'm coming back to L.A., so I better rent a car and get my butt down to Palm Springs, and I went to synagogue, and I heard Roman sing a service.
And he was the founding member of the group, or he's the only surviving member of the group?
He was the only surviving member of the group, and I think then he was 93 or 94, and he stood on his feet for 2 hours at a temple service and sang for a good portion of it, and they took out the Torah scrolls, and they had his name on it in the, I'm not sure what the term is for it, the thing that holds the Torahs. It's a cover for the actual scrolls.
Oh, right.
And it had our beloved cantor, Joseph Sikorsky, because his other name's Joseph.
So he's now a cantor, but he was one of the members of the Comedian Harmonists, one of the Jewish members who emigrated to the States and I guess ended up.
And I think he had the distinction of being the oldest practicing cantor in the United States.
I think he is. I'm not sure whether he's still singing, but he was still singing then. That was
at age 90.
That was in 94.
Because he was born in 01.
Yeah.
Well, I want to wish you all terrific luck with your new show, Band in Berlin, featuring the music originated by the Comedian Harmonists, and good luck on your tour of Germany, which is coming up in May. And I'd love for you to leave us with a song. I think an appropriate song would be Auf Wiedersehen, which means goodbye.
Thanks, Terry. It's been great to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
This is the composer Milton Auger, the guy who wrote Ain't She Sweet, Happy Days Are Here Again, and Auf Wiedersehen.
Gib mir den letzten Abschiedskuss, weil ich dich heute verlassen muss, und sage mir auf Wiedersehen, leb wohl. Wir haben uns so heiß geliebt, und unser Glück war nie getrübt. Drum sag ich dir auf Wiedersehen, leb wohl. Ob du mir treu sein wirst, sollst du mir nicht sagen, wenn man
man sich wirklich liebt, stellt man nicht solche dummen Fragen. Gib mir den letzten Abschiedskuss, weil ich dich heut verlassen muss. Ich freu mich auf ein Wiedersehen, auf Wiedersehen, leb wohl.
Wir haben uns gefunden, geliebt und heiß geküsst. Es waren schöne Stunden, die man nicht mehr vergisst. Ein Märchen geht zu Ende, drum reich mir deine kleinen Hände.
Give me a last farewell embrace, with just one kiss my tears erase, and then I'll say farewell, my dear, be well, my dear, goodbye. The happiness of summer love was but a frail, elusive love. Therefore you say farewell, my dear, be well, my dear, goodbye. Will you be true to me? Such a vain expression. My heart is torn in three. You're leaving me with such a question. Give me her last farewell embrace. The love that's past will ne'er retrace. And so we say farewell, my dear, be well, my dear, goodbye. Say farewell, my dear, be well, my dear, goodbye.
The vocal group Hudson Shad is performing in the documentary musical Band in Berlin, which is being presented this week by the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. Although Hitler banned jazz from German broadcasting, the Nazis used jazz and pop music as a propaganda vehicle to broadcast their message to Britain and the Allied forces. These propaganda records featured pop standards with new lyrics, which mocked Churchill, Roosevelt, and, of course, the Jews. A new book called Hitler's Airwaves comes with a companion CD which features this 1942 Nazi propaganda version of Makin' Whoopee.
The Jews of USA have asked Eddie Cantor to write a new version of his famous old-timer Makin' Whoopee. In one of his latest programs on the air, he sang the following song. Another war, another prophet, another Jewish business trick, another season, another reason for making whoopee. A lot of dough, a lot of gold, the British Empire's being sold. We're in the money, thanks to Frankie, we're making whoopee. Washington is our ghetto, Roosevelt our king. Democracy is our motto, think what a war can bring. We throw our German names away, we are the Kikes of USA. You are the Goys, folks, we are the Boys, folks, we're making whoopee.
That's a Nazi propaganda record made in 1942. Well, coming up, we have a review of Pearl Jam's new CD. This is Fresh Air. Pearl Jam began its career as the flagship band for Seattle grunge music. The fad for that music has faded, but Pearl Jam, led by its charismatic lead singer Eddie Vedder, is still putting out recordings and expanding its style. The band's fifth album is called Yield, and rock critic Ken Tucker has a review.
Talk of circles, punching out, looking.
I have some bad news for Eddie Vedder. The week Yield came out, the teenager in my house went to the record store intending to buy exactly one CD. She came home with the soundtrack to Titanic. Indeed, in the first week of its release, Pearl Jam's Yield lost the number one spot to Titanic. The Grunge Masters debuted at a slightly humiliating number two. If it's any comfort to Eddie, I like his CD a lot more than any old sinking ship music. One reason Yield is pleasurable throughout most of its considerable length is that Eddie Vedder has largely dropped that woe is me, I've got the weight of the world on my shoulders attitude that used to make him the world's second most boring and pretentious rock star. Number one will always be, of course, Bono from U2. Vedder usually writes the lyrics for the band, lyrics that are either all hectoring self-righteousness or all vague incoherence. How nice, therefore, that Vedder has relinquished control of some of that responsibility. Guitarist Stone Gossard, for example, does a fine job of setting up a mood and contradicting his boss's usual attitude in a song called No Way.
All the static in my attic, she's down my side nerve. To the ocean, oh, my platitudes,
hear Eddie Vedder say, "I'll stop trying to make a difference." This from the guy who spent his career doing things like making a distinction between rock stardom and rock craftsmanship, who refused to make music videos because to him they symbolize selling out, who tried to take on the monolithic corporation Ticketmaster to get them to lower prices for the fans. Well, you could look at this as a depressing admission of defeat, or look at it the way I do, as an acknowledgement that sometimes the function of a rock star is to be a rock star.
I wish I
Pearl Jam has been around for a decade now, and their popularity is waning a little. The band's previous release, No Code, in 1996, was considered a near flop for only selling a couple of million. But sometimes bands pull good work out of themselves when the spotlight begins to turn away from them, when the pressure is off a little. That's certainly how I hear much of the strength, the creative yield, that is the sum total of this gratifyingly flexible, understatedly ambitious collection.
Ken Tucker is critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. Coming up, we remember Dr. Spock with a 1988 interview. This is Fresh Air. America's best-known baby doctor, Dr. Benjamin Spock, died yesterday at his home at the age of 94. Since the mid-40s, Dr. Spock's book, Baby and Child Care, has been considered a parenting Bible, and many of us are the products of his approach to child-rearing. The book begins with the reassuring sentence, "You know more than you think you do," and goes on to offer nervous parents plenty of advice about their child's health and development. In the late 60s, the famous baby doctor was also in the front lines of the protests against the war in Vietnam. I spoke with Dr. Spock in 1988 and asked how his views on raising children had changed over the years.
I always believe that parents should respect their children but should not forget to ask for respect from their children. And I never changed my basic philosophy, though, of course, all kinds of things have changed in pediatrics, and there have been all kinds of sociological changes. I don't mean that I'm obstinate, stuck in the mud. Maybe I am, but I wouldn't be proud of that.
You combined pediatrics and psychology, and I was wondering what brought the realization to you that the two in your work belong together.
There were no other pediatricians who'd had formal training in psychoanalysis or psychiatry or psychology. I was in the middle of my pediatric residency when I realized I must have some kind of training, and I wrote to several professors of pediatrics asking where I could get such training, and they all answered there is no such training, which certainly was true. So I thought in terms of a residency. I took a one-year residency in psychiatry that was going to include some child psychiatry. The one thing that I learned out of that year was that the people on the staff, the teaching staff, who made the patient's symptoms and behavior meaningful were the psychoanalytically trained people. So I decided I need psychoanalytic training. So in 1933, when I started pediatric practice, I began psychoanalytic training at the New York Psychoanalytic Institute. If you want to persist, why did I decide that this was so important? I think that it was because I grew up in a very child-centered family. My mother stopped playing bridge that she loved to do when I was born and kept away from the bridge table until our youngest child was in college. But she was also a very severe parent who made life somewhat miserable for all of her children. And I think my feeling was, one, I'm concerned about being the best kind of pediatrician I can be, but I must have also realized, at least dimly, there are pleasanter, easier ways of bringing up children than the rather severe stern, moralistic way my mother brought all of us up.
When you first started publishing your baby and child care book, it was, I think, 1946.
That's right.
What kind of advice was in the air then? What were the typical baby care manuals telling parents to do?
Well, a good example would be thumb-sucking. The books that predated mine said thumb-sucking is a bad habit. And if you see your baby beginning to thumb suck, why, you should immediately step in and prevent it by, one, painting nasty-tasting stuff on the thumb, or another way is to put aluminum mitts on the baby's hands, or the most horrible way is to spread eagle the baby by tying his wrists to the slats of the side of his crib. And when I was a resident in pediatrics, nurses thought that they were doing their duty. Here were these poor, miserable infants snatched away from home and from everybody that they knew, and they were trying to comfort themselves, at least half of them, by sucking their thumbs, and they weren't allowed to do even that. Well, I couldn't find out right away what's good advice about thumb sucking, but gradually I came to the kind of advice that's in baby and child care, that it has something to do with not having enough sucking satisfaction.
So what do you tell parents to do if their baby is sucking?
I say, don't wait until he becomes a thumb sucker. And incidentally, some babies have the skill to be a thumb sucker right from birth, and others it takes them a couple of months to learn regularly to get the thumb in their mouth. What I say is, just as soon as you see signs that the baby is trying, use a pacifier.
Since 1968, some people have charged you with permissiveness.
I know.
And because of some of the principles in the baby and child care book, but also by 1968, you were in the front lines of the anti-war protests. And I think some people felt that the baby boom generation that was demonstrating against the war was somehow under your spell.
I know.
Because of your baby and child care books. Did you think that the permissiveness charges really had as much to do with anti-war protests as it did with parenting?
I think that the accusations that I was permissive came not from anything that was in my book. It really came from the political situation that I was opposed to a war that a majority, certainly of conservative people, felt should be supported. Actually, it's always people who've not used the book who are sure that my book was corruptive. The kind of letter that I used to get, angry letter that I only get rarely now, said, "Thank God I never used your horrible book. That's why my children take baths and wear clean clothes and get good grades in school." Whereas the people who've used my book almost invariably say, if they mention this subject at all, they say, "And I don't see that the book is permissive." And I say, "That's right. Never was intended to be permissive. I never believed that you should give children anything they want or let them say anything they want or have anything they want."
When you started protesting against the war in Vietnam and marching against it, you were already in your 60s.
That's right.
And you once said,
strange age to begin behaving like that.
Well, usually people get more conservative, not more radical, as they get older.
Right.
But you once said that when you first started demonstrating, you found the experience excruciatingly embarrassing.
Oh, it was.
Well,
I was
why?
A very self-conscious person to be out on picketing and walking around in a circle and having television and radio people stick a microphone under my nose and saying, "Doctor, what are you doing here?" As if I'd been caught in a raid. It was very embarrassing to me. I counted on my dignity. I didn't start by protesting against the war in Vietnam. You see, what I started with was the need for a test ban treaty back in 1962. I was convinced that if we didn't have a test ban treaty and all nations as they developed nuclear arms kept testing to their heart's content, there'd be more and more fallout all around the world, more and more children dying of cancer and leukemia or being born with mental and physical defects. So I saw it very definitely as a pediatric issue.
In your baby and child care book, you have a warning to your readers. You write, warning, salesmen for children's encyclopedias, sets of books on child care, nursery furniture, children's clothing, and equipment may claim that Dr. Spock is intimately connected with their enterprises in some way, or at least endorse their products. All such claims are fraudulent and entitle you to threaten to call the authorities. Call the authorities in order to get rid of the salesman. Has Dr. Spock become such the institution that you have to issue warnings to your readers to watch out for this?
I don't know whether the warnings are necessary now. Certainly for a while I found from parents reporting to me that salesmen came around were very persistent. So I wanted to give parents a good, strong basis for turning them away, to tell them, you're a scoundrel and get out of my way before I call the police.
That's good. One last question. Did you ever show your mother your baby and child care book? And if so, what was her reaction to it?
Well, I was living in fear and trembling when the book came out about what my mother would say, because it ran very counter to many of her ideas. And after I'd sent her a copy, I was almost trembling, waiting for her to say something. And she said, Benny, I think it's quite sensible. Well, I don't know whether she really read it or whether she really read it but didn't understand what was in it, or whether she was just decided to be kind. Anyway, it was a great relief.
Dr. Spock, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's been fun.
Dr. Benjamin Spock died yesterday at the age of 94. Our interview was recorded in 1988. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our program was produced today with Joan Tuohy-Westman. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Phyllis Myers, Amy Sallet, Tracy Tannenbaum, and Naomi Person, with Monique Nazareth. Our engineer is Bob Purdick. Alan Tu directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air is provided by the George Gund Foundation and the National Endowment for the Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, twins and the genetic bridge that connects them. Lawrence Wright talks about how studying twins is teaching us about the extent to which genes determine who we are. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.